Curve crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Sweden, being able to participate in this kind of tournament, it's awesome. And very happy to be down here and get going. We like the team that we have, and you know, we're not shy about our goals. We want to win.
Swedish defenseman Victor Hedman from the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's him speaking about the World Cup of Hockey. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our World Cup of Hockey preview continues. We're going to look at Team Sweden, but first we're going to tell you that this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And as you've heard in the commercials, Bernstein's Deli soon to have flat screen TVs all over the restaurant, open late so you can get some late night deli, watch some of your favorite hockey, kick your feet up. As he's already living there, so you know that's a very exciting development. How many burgers from Bernstein did you end up with? Now the Burger Week has ended a few days ago. Did you go over or under 12 in 7 days?
I think I had 25 or 30. Yeah, I'm not sure, Drew, right. But yeah. You know, I did get the official tally, and Le Burger Week finished earlier this week. Bernstein's Deli sold 1,500.
Wow.
Super delicious fried chicken sandwiches. So congratulations to Aaron and Beth and everybody at Bernstein's, because that burger was obviously a resounding success.
Yes.
And Ezra ate 1,499 of them.
Exactly. As you certainly was customer number one when it comes to the super delicious fried chicken burger. There's still some left, apparently. I'm reliably informed that there's still some left. So if you missed out on getting the burger officially during the Burger Week, head to Bernstein's Deli. You can get your hands on the super delicious fried chicken burger.
Because this is radio, you can't see what's happening in the studio.
As he's salivating.
No, he's currently eating a super delicious burger.
Well, it was only a couple weeks ago where we did the on-air taste test, and that makes for great radio to listen to Ezzy chewing for a good couple minutes.
Well, I actually just texted Aaron just to put a garbage bag full of the super delicious fried chicken burgers just at the back door, and I'll just pick them up. Yeah. After the show,
you're actually gonna fight a raccoon for them, and I have money on you. You both have rabies. I think you have a more virulent strand of rabies, mind you. Anyways, Team Sweden. As we continue our preview of the World Cup of Hockey, this Team Sweden, to me, I think they're playing with a bit of a chip on their shoulder, and I'll tell you why. I think they're still pissed off over what happened in the gold medal game at the Sochi Olympics, when really hours before the game, Nicklas Backstrom was disqualified from playing for a false positive, what turned out to be a false positive of a drug test. He allegedly tested positive. Turned out he didn't. They didn't let him play in the tournament. And so Team Sweden played against Team Canada. That's in the last best-on-best tournament back at the Sochi Olympics without what I would describe them as their best center, Nicklas Backstrom, and one of the best centers in the NHL. So this Team Sweden is, I think, a little bit under the radar because they still haven't come over to North America. They're still playing their pre-tournament schedule. They're going to play against Finland in Gothenburg, Sweden, coming up in a couple hours' time. But this Team Sweden, I think, has still got a sour taste in their mouth, not over anything the NHL did, because that was a double IHF fiasco and a Olympic fiasco. But I think this Team Sweden says, we didn't get an opportunity at full strength against Canada back in Russia. This is now our best opportunity. Nobody's really thinking about us. We have a bit of a chip on our shoulder.
I agree with you, Drew, and Sweden.
You've never agreed with me this much in the entire history of this show. It's getting a little frightening.
I make Ezra more agreeable.
That's not true, Drew. You make some good points, I would say about 10% of the time. But when you're talking about Sweden, Dave and Drew, they expect to win gold just like Canada does, just like the U.S. does. There's a few teams, I think I would throw Finland in there. There's certain teams that expect to win gold every time they enter a tournament. They didn't get the result that they wanted in 2010 in Vancouver or 2014 in Russia. And sure, they have a chip on their shoulders, and Sweden isn't going to have Henrik Zetterberg, who would have been their captain. They don't have Alex Steen, of course, from Winnipeg, who isn't on their roster, and he would have been a great player for this team. But when you're talking about defense, that, and that's what it all comes back to me, led by Victor Hedman and Erik Karlsson and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, it's the best group of defensemen aside from Canada. And even when you're talking about their group of forwards.
Is it better
forwards,
than Canada's without Duncan Keith?
It's good.
I mean, Matthias Ekholm, you didn't even mention.
Matthias Ekholm's a good defenseman,
great
too.
Great defenseman. Yeah. I mean, Matthias Ekholm, you know, you can argue he's been one of the best defensemen on the Nashville Predators.
Well, he's
the
second pairing defenseman for Nashville.
Yeah.
I would say that Canada still has a better defense, even without Duncan Keith, because Jay Bouwmeester is an excellent defenseman. But you could certainly make that argument, Drew. But, you know,
Lindholm is their seventh defenseman right now.
I still think when you're talking about this Swedish team, it comes back to goaltending, because they're going to get their goals. Guys like Louis Eriksson, and you mentioned Nicklas Backstrom, Philip Forsberg, Jakob Silverberg. I mean, even guys like Landeskog, who they had on the bottom lines. I mean, you'd expect Landeskog to be in the top six. This Swedish team, even without Zetterberg and Steen, have tons of offensive firepower. To me, it comes back down to goaltending. Can Henrik Lundqvist play like the Henrik Lundqvist back in 2006 when Sweden won the gold in Turin? That's what it comes down to, because I think Sweden is one of the favorites to win this tournament. But when you look at some of the other teams like Finland, and we talked about North America being a sleeper, there are going to be other teams just in that division that are going to give Sweden problems. We saw Finland already beat them in an exhibition game.
Sure.
And, you know, we talked about it first hour, Drew. You know, you could say, okay, the U.S. beat Canada in an exhibition game. Who cares? But Finland beating Sweden in a pre-tournament game means everything to that country.
Yeah. Sweden's offense isn't as dynamic as Canada's, isn't as dynamic as Team North America's, isn't as dynamic as Russia's, although Russia's defense and goaltending leave me with a great deal of pause. This isn't a offensive, I don't think the Swedes are an offensive dynamo in this tournament. You know, you got the Sedins, who are both, you know, in a short tournament, they're going to be fine, even though they're 36 years old. But that next wave of outstanding Swedish offensive talent hasn't come through yet. Is Philip Forsberg ready to take that leap forward? He had a great year, we know, with Nashville last year. That's where I have questions about Sweden, is their offense.
Well, one player that wasn't on that 2014 Olympic team that lost to Canada was Henrik Sedin, so he'll be in the tournament as well. So that's a nice addition for Sweden to have. I think it comes down to the goaltending. I mean, like, Henrik Lundqvist is coming off his worst playoffs of his career, I believe. Like, his numbers were atrocious, and obviously the Penguins went on to win the Stanley Cup, so it wasn't like he lost to a bad team, but there was some rust, you know what I mean? There was clearly some playoff rust with Henrik Lundqvist, and he's the key. I think that, as he's illustrated it correctly, I think their defense is excellent. I think they have some phenomenal forwards. I mean, you've got some older guys, but clearly they've got the depth to score some goals. So the key point for Sweden is, can they keep the puck out of the net? And obviously that falls on Henrik Lundqvist.
Right, and to Drew's point earlier, Dave, I think you're right. I mean, this Swedish team is a veteran team, with the exception of Jakob Silverberg and Gabriel Landeskog, who are in their early 20s. Rickard Rakell is another guy who's a little bit younger. Yeah. This is a veteran team. The Sedin, well, Philip Forsberg, too, is one of those guys. But when you're talking about the Sedins, you're talking about Nicklas Backstrom, Louis Eriksson, Patrick Hornqvist. I mean, these are guys who are in their late 20s when it comes to the Sedins, mid-30s, right?
Yeah.
So it is a veteran team. You know, the defense is a little bit younger when you're talking about guys like Victor Hedman and Hampus Lindholm, but certainly they are not producing the young forwards that Finland is with Patrick Laine,
Barkov,
Jesse Puljujarvi, Sebastian Aho, stuff like that. So
Alexander Barkov, absolutely right.
Who is going to be the next wave of great Swedish forwards? I mean, there are some good ones, but certainly when you talk about Canada, U.S., and Finland, they're producing better forwards at the international level. So I still think Sweden's going to be a threat in this tournament. But I wouldn't be surprised if they don't make it to the semifinals, because when you're talking about Finland, Russia, and North America, the other teams in that group B, I mean, it's three games right before the semifinal, and it's going to be tough for Sweden. We already saw Finland give them a bunch of problems in the exhibition game. As you said, they're going to play again today.
Yeah, I should make a note about today's game. Rickard Rakell out of the lineup for Team Sweden today. He's sick. Marcus Kruger also unavailable with an upper body injury that he suffered in the first game. So they're going to go with 11 forwards and 7 defensemen. Matthias Ekholm, who was supposed to be a healthy scratch, is going to play for Team Sweden today. They'll go with the 7D and the 11 forwards. So you're you're already seeing some problems for the Swedes up front, particularly. I mean, the injury, the illness, no big deal with Raquel, assuming he can bounce back. With Marcus Kruger, upper body injury, you never know how quickly those are going to heal. But for the Swedes, I do think it starts, to your point, Ezzy, it starts with Henrik Lundqvist, and it starts on their back end because their defense is... I think their defense is better than Canada's in this tournament.
Right, and unlike Canada, I think you can make that point. I still think Canada's defense is better, but they do not have the goalie depth that Canada and the U.S. have. Because if Henrik Lundqvist isn't playing well, then they turn to Jacob Markstrom.
Yeah.
And Jacob Markstrom is not as good as Braden Holtby. He's not as good as Ben Bishop. And I think after that, it's Jonas Enroth
who replaced Robin Lehner, who was, of course, for the Buffalo Sabres. He was out with after having surgery in the offseason.
They don't have the same depth. If Lundqvist is not playing like the Lundqvist that you expect, King Henrik, right, then they're going to be in trouble.
It doesn't. I mean, Lundqvist, under no circumstances are they going to have... Lundqvist is going to be their guy game in, game out. They just don't have... You can't trust Markstrom. He's not as good. I mean, he's just not as good as Henrik Lundqvist. It's, you know, Holtby, Price, you can make the argument that Holtby's as good as Price on some nights.
There's ones and ones, 1A.
That's right. In Sweden, there's a clear one, there's a clear two, and then there's a clear three. And that doesn't bode well necessarily for Team Sweden. Let's go to break. When we come back, Terry Koshin of the Toronto Sun has been sitting on the tarmac in Columbus. He was going to join us in the next hour. He's going to join us next. You'll listen to Terry give his analysis of Team USA in last night's game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Terry Koshin. You can read Terry's work at the Toronto Sun. You can also find him with Post Media. Terry, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Just how lovely is the Columbus Airport this time of day? Terry, are you there?
It's not great. now looking at a 2 o'clock departure originally from 10:20 this morning. So I don't know what's happening here, guys. But I guess once I'm done with you, I will hopefully crazy that somewhere good is open for lunch. But anyway, it's a part of the life of travel, I guess.
Yeah, no rest for the sports writer trapped with the flight delays. But anyways, we appreciate you joining us this morning, Terry. You know, talk about Team USA, talk about last night's Canada-USA game there in Columbus. You know, we were talking about this sort of throughout the program. I was surprised, and my colleagues here agree with me, just how intense that game got between Canada and the U.S. sort of right off the start. We were sort of expecting maybe a bit of a sleepy game, get their legs under them. There was nothing sleepy about that battle between Canada and the U.S. last night.
No, there wasn't. And going into it, like, I've been here all week. I came in Monday and been with the Americans all week, and you know, you're kind of getting the sense, a few of them said, you know, they've figured that the first 10 minutes or so would be a fielding out process. And then, you know, Ben Bishop was saying yesterday after the morning skate, he thought that it might just, the whole game might be kind of like that before they really get into it. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, guys, they get on the ice, they see the logo that the opposition is wearing, and any fielding out process, I think, immediately goes out the window. We saw it last night, and you know, I would imagine it carries over into Ottawa tonight. I think that, you know, one thing for sure that I had the impression of this week, that although the players were saying that, they were ready to get this going last night. And they arrived at camp Monday fully prepared. The practices were rap tempo, Tortorella runs type practices. They were intense. And really, I guess, looking back on it now, I'm not overly surprised that it became as chippy as it was. And, you know, afterward, Sidney Crosby, among others, saying that was what he kind of expected. So, you know, I think it bodes well. It doesn't bode too well if your National Hockey League team's watching this and keeping your fingers crossed that some of your players might not, don't get hurt. But it bodes well for tonight. It bodes well for that first game they're going to play each other in the round robin and quite possibly in the final.
Terry, from the Team USA players that you have talked to, how much are they embracing that underdog role, and how much are they using that 1996 World Cup of Hockey win as motivation to beat Canada and show everybody that the Americans are the best country when it comes to hockey?
Well, they've embraced 96. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we've all written about it this week. They were, you know, during the summer, once the team, I guess at the end of May, the final roster was settled upon, they were all sent USB sticks from hockey, USA Hockey, with the game three of the 96 final on it. And we all know what happened in that game. If you haven't had a look, you know, the Americans coming back to win in the third period and sending the Canadians home. So they've embraced the history of it. I guess 20 years is a nice round number. You know, there hasn't been much for them to embrace internationally recently, guys, especially the way the Olympics have gone for them. But and as far as the underdog role, I haven't had the sense of that they're going in thinking that. I mean, they're fully prepared to win this thing, and they think they put together the right team to do it. And I don't think it was a cocky group this week by any stretch, but certainly they're confident. And were they outshot pretty badly last night? Sure they were. Canada in their end a lot, yes. Did Jonathan Quick have to bail them out early? He sure did. But this is a group that is confident they can win. And it's one game and they won it, and there are things to work out. But I don't necessarily think that they're going into this looking at themselves as vast underdogs at all.
Terry, you know, here in Canada, obviously, we talk about hockey at the moment. There's an opportunity. In the U.S., sometimes it's a little bit different because it's not the primary sport of most most people there. What's been the general embracing of this tournament in the U.S. that you've seen?
Well, in Columbus, Columbus is a good hockey town, guys. In the times I've been here over the years to cover the Maple Leafs, I had the fortune of covering the Jackets Penguins playoff series a few years ago. It's fully embraced, and the fans are enthusiastic about it. They were enthusiastic about it last night, in getting that the one view they will have of these guys as it now moves on. But at least in this area, I can't speak for the rest of the country, of course, obviously, because I've only been kind of embedded here for the past week. But I know that it's embraced here, and fans here are looking forward to it. And that was the other thing with last night, guys. We talked about the feeling out process. You know, one reason why it was gone, I think, too, is because the what the fans were doing, the USA, USA chant going early on, Crosby being mercilessly booed during pregame introductions, and, these fans cheering lustily, too, for players they might not otherwise, someone like Patrick Kane on the American side. So, It's certainly a popular event, at least in Columbus. Like I say, I can't speak for other locales, but certainly here they're ready to get this tournament on.
It doesn't take much to get Americans to wrap themselves in the flag, so that certainly is patriotism. No. Is a strong suit for the for our friends down down south.
Yes,
Terry Koshan of the Toronto Sun joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Terry, obviously, you look at the U.S. defense, and when you compare it to, from our perspective, Canada's defense or to Sweden's defense, they're probably a step behind. They just don't have the depth, and it's probably the talent as Canada and the U.S. do. How important, how much is John Tortorella preaching about a sort of a five-man defensive unit being the key to Team USA's success in this tournament?
Well, it's kind of interesting. He hasn't really been preaching that overly. Mostly, it's a full the system he seems is a full-on attack, guys. And I think if you get past the idea that not the idea, like you say, the fact that maybe the group of defensemen isn't as strong as you'd like it to be, they have Jonathan Quick, and I'm imagining now that he'll be the starter for this tournament once it starts next Saturday. And we're all saying a few times this week that if we play that system of hockey, we know that there will be things that have to be cleaned up in the back end, i.e. by the goaltending. Dean Lombardi said it one day as well. And they have all the full confidence that any goaltending could do it. Again, I think it's going to be Quick. So as much as you want that five-man defense thing in a perfect world, I think that they're looking at, establishing that forecheck, and if you can't recover quickly, if things don't go well in the opposition's end, then you have the guy in net to make up for some mistakes or errors or whatever you want to call it, miscues. So, you know, it's an interesting way of going at it, but I think it's going to make for some exciting hockey. And, you know, from the way Quick played the first two periods last night, it's a small sample size, but there's no reason to believe why it might not work for them.
Terry, as far as Team Canada goes, once this tournament gets going, how much do you think they're going to miss Duncan Keith? And how much of a problem do you think it's going to be that Team Canada has 10 natural centers on this roster?
That's hard to say right now. You know, we all know, guys, that in these international events, the players that can come and make the adjustments to do things that normally or usually they don't with their club teams usually lead the most successful teams. We've seen Canadians do it in the past. Players taking on perhaps more defensive roles than they might be asked to play back in the NHL. So Duncan Keith, you want him here? Of course you do. You know, that's somebody you can easily overlook. But, you know, again, we talk about perhaps the lack of depth the Americans have on the blue line. The Canadians have that in spades on theirs. And, you know, it was with Max Pacioretty was saying to us yesterday, you know, it's amazing that Canada can lose some of these players they do, and then you see the players that they're coming as replacements, and you kind of wonder why they weren't on the team in the first place. So, positionally up front, you know, if last night's an indication, I mean, 43 shots on goal. I know that one line of Crosby, Chien, Marchand, and Bergeron responsible for a lot of that, 18 shots and a lot of really good scoring chances. But I don't think that these things are major concerns going into the tournament.
Terry Koshan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Terry, obviously, you know, here in Winnipeg, we're mostly focused on Dustin Byfuglien and Blake Wheeler, two players who are going to be key members of Team USA. What were your impressions of their performance in last night's game?
Oh, fine. I mean, it's interesting twosome for them, too, because, you know what you're going to get with Blake Wheeler, right, guys? I mean, I need to tell you that. These listeners know that. Byfuglien can be a little more intriguing, if you will. And Tortorella has touched on that this week. He said he just loves the guy's personality. And Tortorella is a funny guy. As much as he wants these players to adhere to what, you know, he believes in and what they should be doing on the ice every shift, there is room for something that might be a little bit out of the ordinary. You might get some of that from Byfuglien on the blue line. We know that. But the shot, I mean, obviously they're going to try to get that, put that to use as much as they can. And, you know, it's a difficult thing. We talk about what Zdeno Chara has been able to do and Shea Weber with that shot from the point, but Buffalo's got to be right up there in that group. And, you know, it's Tortorella referred to Byfuglien, I think, as a character-type player and as a character person. Different guy a bit personality-wise, but he clearly likes him or else he wouldn't be here. And the potential that he brings, and, you know, like I say, Blake Wheeler is Blake Wheeler. Leadership and all that. You know, I would imagine that though he's not wearing a letter on his sweater, the front of his sweater, he'll be a strong voice of that U.S. dressing room. And like you say, I think both of them are being counted on for different reasons to be integral pieces of this club in the next 2 weeks.
Terry, I asked Craig Custance this earlier in the show. Were you at all surprised that Ryan Kesler won't face supplemental discipline for his hit on Shea Weber?
Not really. You know, I think it was dealt with. The proper call was made last night. And, you know, if anything, guys, maybe, you know, a missed call on Oshie on Logan Couture, I think, was there should have been a penalty there. But, no, not overly surprised that Kester won't face for the discipline.
Terry, we'll let you go on this last question. And you mentioned Crosby and Brandon Dubinsky's there, you know, playing for the Blue Jackets. Yep. And he's been a Crosby agitator sort of from the, you know, going back to his years in New York, and, you know, certainly not afraid to get his stick into Crosby's midsection and onto his wrists. You know, is this sort of the tone set for the tournament, you know, with Dubinsky and his interactions with Crosby in the game last night, that this is just how it's going to be between these two teams, particularly when they meet tonight in Ottawa and then when they meet in the round robin?
Yeah, I would think so. Tortorella was saying this week that he doesn't want to get overly caught up in matchups, but you know darn well that we've seen what Dubinsky has done with Crosby in the past, and I would imagine that more often than not, you know, in the games they meet, especially in the round robin, and then like I said, going forward if they meet the final, when Crosby's on the ice, you know, Dubinsky will be as well. But again, that Crosby line last night kind of shrugged its shoulders and went and did what it did, 18 shots on goal and scoring a goal. So that was still there. They weren't shut down by any means, but Dubinsky loves that role, and he's good at it. He's a hell of a hockey player. Sidney Crosby is too. So I would imagine that when these teams meet in the important games, that will certainly be one of the subplots for sure.
From the Toronto Sun, Terry Koshan joins us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Terry, really appreciate your time, and hopefully you get home and get out of the Columbus airport sooner rather than later.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I'm really glad it worked out. Good to talk to you.
Likewise, Terry. Take care. Let's head to break. When we return, we continue our preview. Next up, Team Russia. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
To the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Oh, it's great. It's always nice.
What do you think your team's chances are?
You don't know who's ready or who's not, but I think everybody has the same chances because nobody obviously played, only practicing, so. Basically the same. It's always fun to play at some tournaments, competitions against the best teams. So it's always nice.
Alex Ovechkin, Team Russia captain, in mid-season form, saying absolutely nothing. saying absolutely nothing regarding Team Russia and the World Cup of Hockey.
That was such time filler. I mean, honestly, I couldn't believe it. Did he say one word? He said a word. He actually used multiple words.
But he said nothing.
They said absolutely nothing.
Mid-season form. I mean, that's a hockey player in mid-season form. God forbid you give a little bit of an ancillary quote about how excited you are to wear your country's jersey, blah, 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 blah. In any event, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number 3 here on TSN 1290. Segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
I hope Logan Couture was wearing his mouth guard yesterday.
Yeah, well, I think most of the NHLers usually try and wear a mouth guard.
Logan Couture, Claude Giroux, yeah. Shea Weber. A lot of guys went face first into the boards.
It was a chippy game between Canada and the U.S., as we have well documented. They'll be back in action against one another later on tonight. Team Russia in action in a pre-tournament game against the team from the Czech Republic, 0-0 with about 6 minutes to go in the second period there. A fight just broke out not that many minutes ago when we were talking to Terry Koshan between Alexei Yemelin and Milan Mihalik. Yeah. So certainly no love lost between these former countries of the Eastern Bloc, Russia and Czech Republic, as they continue to do battle in a pre-tournament game.
I am just still, I can't get over how shocking it is that Michael Jordan is playing for Team Czech Republic. I thought he played basketball.
Yeah, it's a lame joke.
As he's also in mid-season form.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, shout out to Sarah Orleski doing a great job covering the U.S. Open in Toronto. I know you're a tennis guy, Drew. You love tennis.
I am.
You've got that 90 mile an hour serve.
That would be my dream gig.
New York, though.
So go move down to Florida.
With New York?
No, it's in New York.
It's in New York. Flushing,
yeah,
New York.
Move down to Florida and cover tennis with Harvey Fielkov.
I could do that. Sarah's doing a great job and she's working hard, but
yep.
2 weeks watching tennis, and I know it's not the same as observing tennis when you're working at it, but this, 2 weeks in New York at the U.S. Open, it's on my bucket list of one of the trips to do is to head to the U.S. Open.
Drew, would you ever consider being a ball boy or a ball man?
I would, but then I would take out a player a la Kramer and it would be a scandal for years to come. Is that the reference you're going for?
I'm just saying, if you were a ball boy or a ball man, you could maybe get into Wimbledon or the U.S. Open.
I should travel to the different tournaments and be like a rotating ball boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, something to look forward to. If you're bankrolling me, Ezzy, then I'm game. Let's look at the Team Russia roster ahead of this World Cup of Hockey. Russia, of course, not the world power that they once were in the hockey world. And I think it's strictly a matter, this defense. We talked about it at 2010 at the Olympics. We talked about it at Sochi in 2014. This defense just isn't good enough. I mean, this defense is one of the worst defenses in the entire World Cup of Hockey, I would suggest.
Yeah, you could make that argument, Drew. I still think Team Europe's defense is probably the worst. You know, it's one of the oldest, certainly. But yes, that is the Achilles heel, if you will, of this Russian team. Apparently, Alexei Emelin has been running around quite a bit in this exhibition game against the Czech Republic that we've got on here in the studio. But yeah, when you're talking about the Russian defense, we mentioned Alexei Emelin, but you're talking about guys like Dmitry Kulikov from Florida. You're talking about guys like Dmitry Kulikov, ex of Florida.
Yeah.
You're talking
now
about
Buffalo
guys like
Sabres.
Buffalo Sabres, Dmitry Orlov. It's just not that good of a group of defensemen. But when it comes to Russia, guys, you're talking about still a country that has one of the best groups of skilled forwards. We talked about Alexei Ovechkin, but you're talking about Evgeny Kuznetsov. You're talking about Nikita Kucherov. You're talking about Evgeny Malkin, Vladimir Tarasenko, Artemi Panarin. I mean, we can go on and on and on here. The Russians are going to score goals, but can Sergei Bobrovsky steal a game? And in this tournament, you have to steal a game. Most likely, especially when you're talking about Russia in a group with Finland, with Sweden, and North America. So I still think Russia is going to be dangerous in this tournament. I don't know, though, if they even get out of their own group and make it to the semifinals.
Well, I think Russia is going to be dangerous strictly because of the offensive firepower they have. Because, I mean, Ovechkin, Kucherov, Malkin, Tarasenko, Panarin, I mean, Datsyuk, I mean, you know, a little bit older, but still, you know, player. That offense is still probably one of the best in the tournament.
Yep.
If they can get one of their goaltenders, is Bobrovsky going to be their guy? Is he the guy you would run with in this tournament?
He played the first pre-tournament game.
Right. So, I mean, they have Bobrovsky, they have Varlamov from Colorado, Semyon
right.
Varlamov, and then they have Andrei Vasilevsky.
I expect it to be Bobrovsky, Drew, just to answer your question, and second would be Varlamov. Vasilevsky is still relatively young at 21, 22 years old.
Yeah, 22.
So he would be the third goalie on this roster. Bobrovsky did not have a very good season. He had a better second half of the season, but certainly Bobrovsky and Varlamov have the ability to compete and be really good goaltenders at this level. But certainly when you talk about Team Canada,
Vasilevsky.
Vasilevsky doesn't have the senior international experience.
Right.
So I don't think they're going to put him in there and expect him to be their guy.
I would agree with you. I don't think he'll be their guy, but I think that they might be making a mistake by not making him their guy. I mean, everybody expects he's going to take over in Tampa Bay after this season, that Ben Bishop's going to be on his way out, and Vasilevsky is the goaltender in waiting. We know that he's performed well in the playoffs before when Bishop went out with an injury a couple seasons ago. You know, I think we know what Bobrovsky and Varlamov can do, and we know that they've never been able to do it on the international stage. And I get the politics behind not going with Vasilevsky, but I think that they might be making a mistake in that manner just because Vasilevsky does have that much talent for Team Russia and for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
But I think you have the flexibility. I think that you see what these guys are able to give you in the first couple of games, and if they don't give you what you need, then you can default to a Vasilevsky.
The problem, yes, but the problem that Russia is facing is they are in that Pool B, which we've talked about,
yep, right.
Which is got really, that is the, I mean, you got Russia, Sweden, Finland, and North America.
Mm-hmm.
Any of those four teams, hard to believe, but I would almost, you can make the argument that Russia is the biggest underdog of the four, that Russia doesn't, I mean, any of the four can go through. So it's not like there's going to be any shocks there, like if Europe went through in Pool A. But of those four teams, I mean, you can make the argument that Russia's got the least amount of talent of the four, particularly on the back end, and that might be their Achilles heel. So if you need the goaltending, you don't have the flexibility to go a game, have some bad goaltending, and then realize that you need to make a switch.
Let's be honest, guys. Russia has to score goals. I mean, this team is built around offense. Guys like Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, we talked about Kucherov, Tarasenko, Panarin. These guys have got to be putting the puck in the net. The defense is just not good enough. I don't have as many concerns about the goaltending, even though Bobrovsky and Varlamov are both coming off of poor regular seasons. I still don't think it's as big of a concern. These are good number one NHL goaltenders. But if that offense dries up at any point in the tournament, they're going to be in trouble. Because I agree with you, Drew. I think Sweden and Finland are the two best teams in that group. And when you're talking about Team North America, they can surprise some teams.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have guys like Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel and Austin, Mark Scheifele, yeah. Austin Matthews, Brandon Saad, the list goes on and on and on. Johnny Gaudreau. I mean, they're going to score goals too. So I think they're going to win some games in this tournament. But again, when you're talking about guys like Ovechkin and Malkin and Tarasenko, I mean, these guys are going to score their goals too. And we've seen them score against the Czech Republic. Czech Republic is I think, one of the weaker teams in this tournament. But certainly, Russia needs to be going on all, firing on all cylinders. Because this defense, I mean, we've talked about it. Dmitry Orlov, Alexei Emelin, Markov, his better years are behind him. Mm-hmm. Kulikov, Marchenko, Nikita Nesterov. It's just not a group that you look at it and you say, okay, wow, that's an all-star group of defensemen.
It's a middling group of defensemen. They don't have the top-end talent that a lot of the other teams have, that particularly Canada has or Sweden has.
You could very easily say this is the fourth best team in that pool.
I mean, my point is.
It's hard, you know, because that's the beauty of this team, North America. Nobody really knows what you've got. I mean, obviously they beat, Europe 4-0, but like they could end up being the best team in that division. So it's just very interesting to see, like, Russians could be the worst, which is hilarious because, you know, we always think the Russians are a superpower.
Why?
And especially with that firepower, it's not hard to understand why. But like you guys have both said, it's that back end that could be the Achilles heel.
If you don't produce any defensemen, any top quality defensemen, then Russia hasn't produced top quality defensemen in, going on years now. I mean, who was the last great Russian defenseman, It's been,
Sergei Bauten?
Well, not quite Sergei Bauten, but it's certainly been a long time since you've had a dominant Russian defenseman. I mean, and eventually it catches up to you on the international stage.
I would agree with that. And Russia is always one of those teams that you don't know what to expect, right? And we talked about the last few Olympics, 2010, 2014. When you're talking about 2014 in Sochi, Russia, I mean, that was almost, you could say, an embarrassment for Team Russia. The expectations for Team Russia, Drew, in 2014 were to win gold.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. Not silver, not bronze. It was to win gold. They didn't win gold. They didn't win silver.
Because if you remember, that's when Ovechkin said that if the NHL doesn't go to Sochi, I'm just going to leave the Capitals. I'm going to go play for Russia. It doesn't matter. I'm going to go play. And they laid an egg in front of their home. It would be like if Canada, sucked at the Vancouver Olympics.
Russia's history at international tournaments has been very good at the World Juniors, very good at the World Hockey Championships, but when it comes to the World Cup of Hockey and the Olympics, they've been underachievers.
1987 has been a long time, since that famous game against the Canada. It's been a long time since we really think of the Russians as a dominant hockey superpower. And I'm not sure that this year is going to change anything with that poor defense that they're putting out for the World Cup of Hockey. When we come back, Team Europe and Team Czech Republic are the focus of our attention. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, World Cup of Hockey Preview Show on TSN 1290.
Connection, because all of these countries are used to being underdogs. All eight of them go into every international tournament as outsiders. But this group coming together, we can look everybody we're playing in the eyes and play with courage.
Team Europe head coach Ralf Krüger talking about a decided underdog that the team, Team Europe would be entering into this tournament. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We continue our World Cup of Hockey preview with Team Europe and the team from the Czech Republic, the Czechs and the Russians in action in a pre-tournament game. And there's certainly been more than a couple scrums. Looked like a little bit of a, not quite, I wouldn't call it a line brawl, but there was certainly some meeting of the minds between Team Czech Republic and Team Russia earlier. We'll start with Team Europe, the team of the...
No, just as an aside, Ralf Krüger from Winnipeg.
Yes, certainly.
And a former guest of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He was great when we had him on. A very well-respected coach.
Yes, certainly.
I think he's got his work cut out for him with this team, though.
He does have his work cut out with him with this team. He treated poorly back in the day by the Edmonton Oilers when they dismissed him as the head coach. This team has got talent. It's got some nice players, but I just don't think that they have no... This is a difficult team to evaluate because they've had no time together. It's not like some of the, you know, Team Russia, Team Canada, Team USA. These guys have played together before in international tournaments. This Team Europe is just getting thrown together at the last minute, say, really go out and do your best. And I just think it's going to be too much of a hill to climb, particularly playing in that difficult pool against Canada and the United States. I think they could beat the Czech Republic, but I just don't think that they can do enough to get over Canada, the U.S. to qualify for the semifinals.
Unlike North America, where you have guys who have played, grown up playing together, so a lot of, you know, you have a lot of Canadian kids or a lot of American kids who have some familiarity with each other.
Yes.
These guys are all from, for the most part, individual countries.
Yeah, there's a reason why they don't have a national anthem. It's because they don't have a nation.
That's right, exactly. So you're,
I don't think we should get into the national anthem, so let's just not touch that.
But anyways.
Okay, Torts.
Yeah, and he's not allowing us to express our opinion. Yeah.
I don't agree with what he did, by the way. Torts.
Okay. Well, are we changing the segment mid-segment?
It wouldn't be the first time that's happened, but we can deal with that at a later date and time.
So it's definitely difficult. I mean, Ralph Kruger has a very keen hockey mind. You heard Paul Maurice talk about it when he was being interviewed with Gary and Huss on the Hustler and Lawless yesterday. And although that's interesting from Jets fans' perspective, because you could really see that Maurice was using this tournament as an opportunity to really kind of gain some knowledge and use Kruger's kind of knowledge of study, because he really is a student of the game for his own sort of edification. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays in the Jets season. But going back to Team Europe, you know, they have a lot of nice pieces. They have a lot of nice players, but it's a lot of, I mean, hockey's a team game,
yeah.
And there's a lot of individuals who are now being thrown together. And again, like I said, unlike North America, there's not that level of familiarity. So I mean, obviously, there's guys like, and, you know, guys who have played on the Red Wings together, guys, you know, that sort of thing. But it's just a very tough situation to kind of throw them all in and say, okay,
here's 1 week worth of practice, you know, and get together and gel. And they just, I mean, it's just too much to ask, I think, of a team in this kind of shortened window of a tournament to really get everybody together. It's not like they were in an opportunity to have, you know, a training camp months earlier when the team was announced or anything, because they're all in the midst of playing for their NHL franchises. So it's, while you can make the argument maybe that Team North America is sort of an exciting team and should be there in future World Cup of Hockey, I don't think you can make the same argument for Team Europe. This is just, it's obvious that this is just sort of a last-ditch team to put together.
Well, I mean, I think that's maybe going a little bit too far. I just think when this tournament was announced, the format of this tournament was announced, right? The big change was that Team Europe and Team North America were going to replace countries, right? And the expectations, I think, were that both of these countries weren't going to win the tournament. But when you're talking about Team North America, they've just got so much speed and skill that you could easily see this team getting to the semifinals and maybe even winning the whole thing. But when it comes to Team Europe, you know, we talked about the goaltenders. Freddie Anderson is replaced by Philip Grubauer on Washington. Jaroslav Halak,
Anderson would have been their starting goaltender.
Right, and I imagine Jaroslav Halak will now be their starting goaltender. Thomas Greiss, I would expect to be the backup, and then Grubauer being the third goalie. But when you're talking about the forwards, I mean, Anže Kopitar, Marian Hossa, Thomas Tatar, Dave mentioned on the Detroit Red Wings, Matt Zuccarello, Marian Gaborik, Leon Draisaitl. I mean, they have guys that can score here, but that defense, after Roman Josi, who's one of the best defensemen in the NHL, probably will play with PK Subban this year. After Roman Josi and Zdeno Chara, you've got guys like Mark Streit, Dennis Seidenberg, who, by the way, is still a UFA, Andre Sekera, Christian Ehrhoff. Again, it comes back to defense. Countries like Canada and Sweden have so much depth on defense that teams like Team North America, even Team Europe, they just don't have that depth there. Zdeno Chara is not the Zdeno Chara he used to be. So
40 years old. I mean,
when you're talking about Team Europe, how are they going to shut down Canada and the U.S.? Like, how are they going to do that? These defenses just aren't very good. I mean, sure, if Jaroslav Halak stands on his head, he might steal a game, but I just don't see it happening.
I don't see it happening either. The only game I can see them potentially as being competitive in is the round robin game against the Czech Republic.
Right.
Because other than that, Canada and the U.S. are just going to be too talented and too good against this team. I mentioned Czech Republic. They're next up on our list of teams to preview as part of our World Cup of Hockey preview show. And it's dramatic, and you can really see it in these sort of best-on-best tournaments, the fall and the disarray of Czech Republic hockey is most evident when you think back to 1998 and them winning gold medal against Canada at the first Olympics in Nagano and the dramatics around that. This Czech Republic team is not very good either.
No, they're not very good. But again, I could easily see either Peter Mrazek or Michael Neuwirth stealing a game. Because those goaltenders have the ability to steal games. We've seen both of those goaltenders come into the MTSer and steal games.
Yeah, but they can't do it against Canada, the U.S. No, they can do it against Europe.
I mean, we've seen Switzerland do it against Canada at the Olympics. So anybody can do it. I'm just saying that when it comes down to winning the whole tournament, guys, I don't see Czech Republic being a contender to win this whole thing. But I do think they could win a game in this tournament.
Yeah, I think they could win a game, but the game that they could win is the game against Europe. I mean, I don't think that they can beat Canada. I don't think they can beat the United States in the round robin. And it goes back to our point earlier just about just how easy that Pool A is as opposed to Pool B. That Canada and U.S. almost, I don't want to say they have a bye to the semifinals because that's just too disrespectful. But it would be a absolute stunning upset if both of those teams aren't the teams that go through. You look at this Russia, this Team Czech Republic, there's not enough talent there. I mean, these are not...
Well, they have guys that can score. Team Czech Republic is constructed very similarly to me to the way Team Europe is constructed. I mean, when you talk about Team Czech Republic, Jakub Voracek, Tomáš Plekanec, they can score goals.
Yeah, Voracek, right? And Palat are their offensive forces.
Andre Palat's a good player. I mean, once it gets down to the third and fourth lines, of course not, Drew. They don't have the same depth that Team Canada has, for example. But, again, it's the defense that's not very good. I mean, after Zibanek Mihalik, after really Zibanek Mihalik, and you've got guys like Radko Gudas and Roman Polak and Andre Schuster, it's just not that good a group of defensemen. So I don't think they're going to be a contender, don't get me wrong, but I also don't think they're going to be a pushover either.
Nobody's a pushover, but I would expect that Canada shouldn't have a ton of difficulty with Czech Republic when they play against them in the round robin.
In a single game.
Anything can happen in one game.
That's what I'm saying. And we saw that Switzerland and Germany always play Canada hard at the Olympics, right? Canada usually beats these countries by one goal. That's all I'm saying. They could put a scare in Canada or the U.S. I'm not saying that they're necessarily going to beat them. I'm just saying I wouldn't just pencil Czech Republic down for an 0-3 record either.
I would suggest that the only way they're going to beat Canada is if the Czech Republic re-annexes Slovakia and they amalgamate as a country once again, and then you'll have guys like Hossa and Gabrik and Tomáš Tatar and that sort of additions to the team. Because, look, the reality is there has definitely been a regression for the Czech Republic from what they were, when they were winning Olympic gold to, although I was on the back of Hasek still, so, shows you what a goalie can do, really, in a tournament. But... it's going to be tough for either of those two teams. Really, when you've got the firepower that the U.S. and the Canadians have, and then you put it up against and the defense and the goalie. They've got all three things firing for them. These two teams don't necessarily have that.
You're right. We're nitpicking to find weaknesses, not even weaknesses, but areas of concern in Canada and in Sweden and in the United States. And, Team North America, you're nitpicking to really, to be critical about them. These guys, you look at it, it's like, ugh. All you are is concerned when you look at these the Team Czech Republic roster or the Team Europe roster. There's nothing but concerns that are coming into play in that, and they just don't have the necessary talent. Andrei Pavlik, of course, is on the roster for Team Czech Republic. I think a clear number three goaltender would be my impression.
Well, there was an article that came out 2 days ago and said, happy to be number three. Which was an interesting kind of attitude from Pavlik. And I guess you could, from one perspective, you could say just being a team player and saying that I'm happy to be on the team and do whatever the team needs for me to win. But conversely, you would think that he'd be wanting to challenge to be that number one.
Well, it's concerning because it's not like Yaroslav Halak and Michael Neuwirth are world-beating NHL goaltenders. They're not Dominik Hasek in their prime. In any event, not a ton expected from the Czech Republic or from Team Europe. When we return, Adam Scorgi is going to join us. He's the executive producer of a documentary called Ice Guardians. You're going to be hearing a lot about it. It's about the role of the enforcer in the hockey world. Adam Scorgi up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Adam Scorgi. Adam is the executive producer of a new documentary called Ice Guardians. It has its premiere coming up on Monday. Adam, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure to have you on, Adam. Obviously, this is a very exciting new documentary. It's called Ice Guardians. It's about the role of the enforcer in the world of hockey. Why did you decide to make this film? Why did you say, you know, the role of the enforcer is something that is worthwhile of a documentary, a feature film documentary, and I want to put my name attached to that?
Well, I went to high school with Scott Parker and Todd Fedoric when they were playing for the Kelowna Rockets, and really got to know them personally, and you know, got to see the humans behind the personas that you know, they took on the ice. And then when I reached out to my director Brett Harvey, who I worked on my previous feature documentaries with, we really looked at this and looked at other docs that have maybe covered the subject matter, and found that we didn't find that there was anything that really looked at the side of the players. Most previous things seemed to have a narrative that they were trying to push, or an agenda coming from the production side, whereas we just wanted to hear from the players. What was it like, you know, taking on this role to make your NHL dreams come true? And then discovering the evolution of the role and how it started and how fighting and hockey began. And that would be the start of this 8-year battle that we went into.
Adam, you feature a lot of interviews in the film with both former and current NHL enforcers, guys like Brian McGrattan, Winnipeg's Colton Orr, Luke Gazdick, and many others. How important was it in this film to let the enforcers tell their own stories?
Super important, I'm glad you asked that, because that's even one of the questions that you know, the director had written for the guys was like, what would you like people to get from an enforcer film? You know, asking the players, what would you like people to see? Because there's so much more to these guys, and I'm sure you've heard it from the locker rooms and how the team perceives these guys than the fighting aspect that the most fans know that they bring. You know, this is why also in the film we interviewed superstar players like Brett Hall and Chris Chelios and Rick Tocchet and Bobby Hall to ask, like, what was it like to play with these guys? You hear that they're, you know, a deterrent of cheap shots or a protector. Did you feel that way? Like, you know, Brett Hall, one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. And he said, absolutely. He said, if you like seeing me score 741 goals, I can tell you right now, Brett Hall would not have been the same player without Kelly Chase and Tony Twist. So it was super important to hear it from the players themselves, how this culture evolved and why the enforcer was important to the team, to the players, and, you know, part of hockey's history.
Adam, many people think of enforcers as uneducated barbarians, but Kevin Westgarth, for example, is a Princeton University graduate. Is it a goal of the film to change the perception of hockey tough guys?
Absolutely. That's the ultimate goal of the film is to just honor their place in hockey history, because whether you agree with fighting in hockey or not, the one thing that can't be argued is that these guys live this role, and they are part of hockey's history, and these guys' stories should be told just like anybody else. But also, when doing a feature doc, you get into those misconceptions. Yes, Kevin Westgarth has his degree from Princeton University in psychology. George Peros has his degree from Princeton in economics. You know, Stu Grimson went on to become a lawyer. Kenny Baumgartner, very successful. Joey Kosher. Like, it's really, really naive and foolish of fans or people to say that these guys are this. You can't paint any of them with a brush. Like, it's been interesting, even when I've been doing certain media interviews, the questions the media will ask me will be like, hey, so these guys are this. And I'm like, no, none of them are one way. They're humans. Like, they all vary, right? So, you know, that's what was so great when we dove into this, was really discovering, like, wow, there's so many misconceptions about these guys, what they do, who they are, the kind of people they are. And I know that whether you're a hockey fan or not, or whether you hate fighting or you love it, after you watch the film, you will understand why these guys did what they did, and you'll have a new opinion of them as people.
Adam Scorgi is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the executive producer of Ice Guardians. It's a new documentary about the role of the enforcer. It debuts on Monday at the Toronto International Film Festival. And Adam, you mentioned that in a lot of the media interviews, you know, some of the interviewers come in with maybe preconceived notions or an agenda that they're trying to push. And, you know, there's certainly pros, and, you know, we don't want to rehash the debate about fighting pro and con, et cetera, et cetera. But are the enforcers themselves, from your opinion, are they the collateral damage in the course of the spirited debate between both sides? People forgetting that these enforcers are actually people and maybe their opinion should matter first and foremost as opposed to the opinion of outsiders?
Man, that is so well put. And probably the best question I've been asked in these interviews is exactly. And that's something we bring up in the film is like, let's ask the players who are taking the risk how they feel about it. Instead of everybody else making the decision for these grown adults and what they're doing, let's present them with the statistical facts and let them make the choice. And we bring up a very interesting poll that was done by CBC in 2012 where they interviewed 1,000 NHL players, said, do you want fighting to stay in the game? And even me, as a casual fan, I thought, like, oh, it must be like 50-50, 60-40. 98% of players said they want fighting to continue. So when the players who are taking all the risk are saying that they believe there's a purpose to this, we need to listen. Now, I'm not saying we should ignore the fact, because also in the film we interview concussion specialists and we look at everything else too. But the interesting thing that I learned from the concussion specialist, Dr. Charles Cater, is that less than 10% of concussions in the NHL are coming from fighting. We're missing the elephant in the room, which is the speed of the game, the size of the equipment that we all wanted when we opened up the game in 2005. 90% of concussions are coming from body checks and the speed of the game. So if we are really concerned, if concussions is the main issue we want to get and we want to make players healthy, we need to not put all the emphasis just on the enforcers. Surely the enforcers are at risk. Nobody's arguing the punches to the head are healthy. But statistically, that's a minority of the concussions are coming from there. So we really need to focus on the elephant in the room, which is the speed of the game and body checks.
You know, Adam, I think that's really well said. And just listening to you talk about this movie, I emailed you about 3 weeks ago when I saw the preview for this movie. I was so excited. I'm like, I got to email Adam right away, and I just can't wait to see this movie. You know, you mentioned Kelly Chase earlier, and we have Kelly Chase on the show quite often to talk about the St. Louis Blues. How important was it for you to get him on board as a producer?
Oh, it was amazing. And Kelly and I have become dear friends, and that's one of those unexpected blessings when you go into the world of making a doc, is that I've become dear friends with a lot of these guys, like Eric Goddard, Riley Cote, Kevin Westgarth, Ryan McGrattan, Kelly. They're friends, right? Like Scott Parker, Todd Fedorik. But Kelly really added that, because as good as rapport we built with these guys and they saw that we were finally asking the right questions and wanting to tell their story, you can never get to that level of being a pro player as far as respect, and because they room together, they live together, they sweat, bled, they have a camaraderie that you can just never get. You can never quite get in there unless you played at that level with them on a team. So when we brought in Kelly and he's like, finally somebody is telling this story correctly, I will open up my Rolodex. It's because of Kelly that Brett Hall interviewed, Joey Kosher, Rick Tocchet, Chris Chelios, Bobby Hall, Wendell Clark, himself. I can't imagine the film without those interviews, like, because they're all awesome in the film. And that was because of him, because he said to them, finally somebody's asking the right questions. And those guys never asked for a penny, never asked for an interview honorarium, said, Kelly, if these guys are asking the right questions and you say it's good, we're in.
So, Adam, I mean, you've talked about how Brett Hall said, if, you know, I don't have 741 goals without, you know, the role of the enforcer. So it really shows how important it was to them. And how important was it for you to show that in the film, the appreciation that these offensively gifted players have for the tough guys and their role in the team?
That was so important, because that's another thing that learning, because we even brought in like a human behavior specialist to talk about this and the camaraderie that people have with the enforcer and why you go to communities. And one of the most predominant jerseys in communities, even with star players, is the enforcer that played there years ago. It was very important to hear that, because you learned that the enforcer brought so much more than just fighting. And that's why the role of fighting in these guys' role has survived in hockey for almost 100 years or however long, like decades. is because they brought so much more. Yes, they were brought in for the physical element, but what teams wanted and why they still try to bring these guys in, even with a Gazdic and Thornton today, is that here's a guy that's willing to put his head through the wall and sacrifice his own self, his own body, to try to, like, even if people say it doesn't really protect team, you can make that debate, but to try to help his team any way he can. Even if he's only given 2 minutes of ice time and he's ridiculed by the media, he's willing to do that because that's how much he loves the game and that's how much he cares about his teammates. And championship teams want a player with that kind of passion and heart in the dressing room. They just do. Kevin Weskar said that's why he was brought into the Kings. It wasn't just that he could fight, but they wanted that element. Coaches would say to, you know, superstar players, like, if you had one-tenth of his heart with your talent, you could be in the Hall of Fame. That's why they still want these guys in the dressing room and why other players migrate to them. There's a deeper human tribal thing of why we migrate to the guy that's willing to put himself in harm's way for the betterment of his team. So it was super important for us to make sure that we showed from the superstars' perspectives, these guys saying, this is how important they are to me and why to this day, Kelly Chase and Brett Hall are best of friends.
Adam Scorgi is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the executive producer of Ice Guardians, a documentary examining the role of the enforcer in hockey. It debuts on Monday at the Toronto International Film Festival. Adam, in the course of your interviews, was there anybody that sort of jumped out at you and sort of surprised you with their comments? Maybe they were less positive about the role of the enforcer or less positive about the role of fighting in hockey? Or did everybody sort of go maybe quote-unquote by the book?
No, it was, I mean, I had a ton of people shock me, and it's why me and director Brett Harvey really got into this, the doc world, why it's so important to us, because you can sit down and have interviews with people, and they shake your world. They move you to a point where you're like, I look at things differently now from that interview, from the passion they shared. So I couldn't name one guy, because so many interviews, there's these guys just had so much, like Zenon Konopka's a guy I didn't really know much about, and he was amazing, and Kelly Chase, and Joey Kosher, and Kevin Westgarth, who's like the unsung, and Brian McGrattan, like, they're awesome, but you can't, yeah, for the most part, I'm giving spoilers here, we ask guys, if you could, would you do it all again? And predominantly, they were like, yes. Even ones that are battling some severe injuries were like, I would suit up right now if I could. So, but definitely there is a gamut of people that, you know, like Dave the Hammer Schultz, because we go different generations too, where he is a guy that's very conflicted because he's like, I didn't sign up for, you even hear it in the trailer, I didn't sign up to play hockey to fight. He's like, but when this opportunity was there, I was never able to stop, right? So, and then you have other guys like Brian McGrattan that sincerely loves it. Like, yes, he gets stressed out and, you know, and like everybody else, but he legitimately likes what he does. You know, and that was another thing, you know, that when doing other interviews, people push it, be like, oh, so these guys hate it, hey? And I'm like, some do, but some generally love it. And I think Zenon Konopka puts it best in the film that he says, you know, I was doing this in the East Coast Hockey League for $300 a week after taxes. He's like, and people said, see, is it really worth it to have busted up knuckles and stitches in your face, all for that? And he's like, if I didn't love it, I wouldn't do it. I would have quit in the East Coast Hockey League when I was making no money. So he's like, of course, you've got to have a love for it at some point if you're doing it for a long time. I'm sure those guys that came in, did a couple years, wasn't for them, and left. The guys we interviewed didn't have that because we interviewed mostly guys that had, like, you know, 5 to 10 year careers. So most of them didn't have that feeling about it.
Well, Adam, there are definitely going to be a lot of people listening to this interview right now that are going to be wanting to watch this movie tonight. It debuts Monday at the Toronto International Film Festival. Where else can people watch this film and find out more information about Ice Guardians?
So if you just go to Ice Guardians on Twitter or Facebook, we're on there, and I monitor all those, and I'm pretty approachable and get back in a pretty good time. And then the world broadcast premiere is going to be on Super Channel October 8th, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And then it's supposed to be working on a re-theatrical deal, which never happens after a broadcast, to go back to theaters in Canada for a limited release in the new year. And then eventually it'll be on all platforms like Netflix and iTunes and Hulu and Vimeo and all those things. It'll be, there's like kind of a, so, but Super Channel October 8th, world premiere in Toronto if you're here at the Royal Cinema, and then other platforms down the road.
Drew, will pardon me, Adam, will it be available on VHS? Because Drew still likes to watch his movies on
Betamax,
the old VHS
actually.
Player.
I prefer Betamax. Is really, I want to go old school.
Oh, Betamax. Well, I think we'd have to do in a custom order for that, but I'm pretty sure I can get you even those one of those old things called the DVD.
What? I vaguely recall those.
Yeah.
Adam Scorgi is the executive producer of Ice Guardians. It debuts Monday at the Toronto International Film Festival, and then you can look forward in October on Super Channel. Adam, congratulations about the documentary. Looking forward to seeing it in its entirety. Sounds like a fantastic view, and I appreciate you joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Adam. Take care of yourself. One final segment. When we come back, we give our final predictions for the World Cup of Hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Right. On the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, a little banjo music to welcome our friends from Saskatchewan into town for today's Banjo Bowl coverage. Of course, Blue Bomber game day coverage begins at 1 o'clock as Bombing, Walby, and Westwood get you set for the Bombers and the Riders. Bombers looking to win six straight games. Six, actually, more, a bigger number than the number of teeth in the province of Saskatchewan.
That Labor Day Classic was unbelievable. I was actually in Grand Forks, and I only caught the highlights.
It was on ESPN.
Unbelievable.
Yes. Well, it was a good win for the Bombers.
That's what I was telling you, Drew, before the show. Like, when was the last time the Bombers won six games in a row?
And I speculated without knowing the answer back in 2001 is probably the best number I could come up with. I don't know if that's correct or not. I'll let, like I said, the Blue Bomber Game Day crew answer that question for you, Ezzy. Should mention that this final segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Chris Gordon in town. Tickets available, two shows. Check it out. Tom Green coming up from September 22nd through the 24th. So get your tickets for Tom Green. They're going quickly. Tons of great comedy action coming up at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Yeah, absolutely. Are we going to have Tom Green on the show?
I don't know. I can see what I can see what we can do about that.
Let's hook it up.
I'll see what I can do. I will do my best to get Tom Green on the show, and you know, see if he can spare some time for the good folks here at Illegal Curve.
I'll just ask him about Road Trip all the time.
You love that movie.
It was a good movie.
Yeah,
good little flick.
Was there also a Euro Trip?
There was a Euro
Trip.
But he
was not in it.
He was not in it.
Okay.
Euro Trip was actually quite funny as well.
Different sort of
humor.
Yeah.
I actually preferred Euro Trip.
Really?
To Road Trip. Yeah.
No.
No? Not
going
to do it?
I'm going Road Trip on that one.
Okay, fair enough. We can agree to disagree on that front.
I've gone to Europe and I've taken road trips. I'm going with Road Trip.
Road Trip is better? Okay, fair enough.
It's funny because my dad's actually in Europe right now.
Is he driving? Maybe he's doing a road trip through Europe.
Shout out to my dad. He's somewhere in Italy.
Is
probably
he listening?
Eating pizza.
Is he listening to the show?
Maybe. Our good friend Sean Jacob was in Peru recently.
Now we're huge in Peru.
And he was listening to the show in Peru.
Ah, Machu Picchu.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Pretty cool.
Anyways, let's finish it off. We spent the entirety of the program looking at our World Cup of Hockey preview and talking about the eight, quote-unquote, countries that are going to be participating in this tournament. Eight teams, let's say.
Really looking forward to that Team Europe national anthem.
When they win the whole thing.
It just goes to show how, I mean, the statement that the NHL and the NHLPA released about why they're not going to have an anthem was really stretching the bounds. How about the fact you're not a country and non-countries don't have anthems?
Well, the players decided it, though.
Yeah, well, what are we going to stand with their hands over their hearts listening to some instrumental music that's been put together 5 minutes earlier?
Well, you think they have the most players from Slovakia, so they'd start with the Slovakia national anthem, and then they would go to
something
else. Sprinkle
in a little Denmark, a little German, you know, just really bastardize every country. Just really piss off all the countries of the world.
Yeah. They should just play Rammstein Du Hast.
I don't know that one.
Come on, everybody knows it.
Maybe I do, I don't know. You know, I don't. Not a big music
guy.
Du Hast.
Come on, Drew. You know that one. Even a guy who's in his mid-80s should know that one.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Anyways, your previews, guys. Your predictions. Your
oh, yeah. Here we
medal,
go.
Your
this
silver
is the fun
medal.
Stuff.
Yeah. Are they even giving out gold medals? I don't even know. Do you get a medal if you win this tournament? Is there a trophy?
No, there's the trophy that was awarded in 2004.
Right,
the one that looked like
thing.
Some type of plastic vase or whatever
yeah,
it was.
Yeah. That ugly thing. I forgot about that.
Remember Mario Lemieux and Marty Brodeur holding that up in 2004?
Yeah, and then immediately going on and then immediately being locked out of the arena.
Okay, so I'll go first and then I'll let Dave jump in here. This is going to come as no surprise. I think Canada is going to win this tournament. And I think in a bit of a surprise, I think it's actually going to be a rematch. I think it's going to be Canada-Finland.
Really?
I think Finland is going to surprise a lot of people. I think their defense is underrated, and they've certainly got a lot of forwards that can put the puck in the net, Patrick Laine being one of them. So I think it's going to be Canada-Finland in the final, and Canada is going to win the best of three series.
In two games, three games, going to
three.
Sweep. It's going to be so it's going to go down
yep.
to the final game,
yep.
Canada against Finland.
Yep.
I'm going to go with Canada. Oh, that's a real tough one.
Uh-huh.
I really went out on a limb on that one. And I think I'm going to go with Sweden. I think Sweden's going to take it. I think Henrik Lundqvist is going to step up his game, and I think the Swedes will give Canada all they can handle. I don't think they're going to win, mind you. I think Canada will win in three, but I think that it's going to be Canada and Sweden.
I can't wait till Drew gets in here and picks North America.
Oh, no question.
I'm not going to take North America, but I'm not going to take Canada either.
Going to America.
I'm going with the United States of America to
wow.
beat Team Canada in three games.
Make America great again, Drew?
You know what? Not even touching
which is
that
weird
because
he's wearing his Make Mexico Great hat.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Is this because Laura's American?
No, this isn't because Laura's American.
Shout out to Laura, by the way.
Sure, let's give a shout out to my wife. That's very nice. How about my daughter?
She's
oh,
not
Aaron
American,
well.
Though. She's
yeah.
Canadian. She was born in Canada.
Does Aaron
but
get dual
be,
citizenship?
She's going to be a dual citizen.
But
yeah.
Is she right now?
Not yet. Where you're in the, it's a whole process you got to go through.
I'm aware.
Yeah. So anyways, yes, she will
yeah,
also
Dave used to live in the U.S.
I know. She will also have dual citizenship as well, yes. But I think the Americans are going to surprise everybody. I think that the easy round robin is going to set them up for a one-game semifinal. And I don't know why. I don't really have – I mean, logically, there's no reason for me to predict this. But I was right about the Penguins winning the Stanley Cup earlier this year.
Yeah, that was shocking.
That I was right
and
about
the
that.
Sharks making the playoffs.
And the Sharks I was the only one that had the Sharks making the playoffs, too. So maybe I'm on a little bit of a hot streak, and we're going to go with the Team USA to beat Team Canada in three games. It's going to be a rehash of 1996 all over again.
Really? It's bold.
It is bold. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to all of our guests, Terry Koshan from the Toronto Sun, Craig Custance of ESPN.com, Juha Hitela of Usanomat newspaper in Finland, and Adam Scorgi, executive producer of Ice Guardians. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres, and Clear Lake Golf Course. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Props to Rory doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Stay tuned for Blue Bomber Game Day coming up in 1 hour's time here on TSN 1290. Until next Saturday at 8 a.m., this has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.